right. This is WTUL New Orleans, 91.5 FM. This is your news and views program. I'm Kezia here with Gahiji. We're really excited to have Rebecca Mwase. Okay, I said it right. Here in the studio. She is also a theater artist in her own right. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, so I had just seen that the Queer Youth Theater of New Orleans has a show coming up, and that's why I contacted you guys. So maybe we can start there. What's going on with the theater?
Yeah, so we have performances this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Friday and Saturday at 8 p.m. and Sunday at 3 p.m. at the Dryads Theater on O.C. Haley. So the New Orleans Queer Youth Theater is an ensemble of seven young people and three co-directors, myself, Rachel Lee, and Evan Spiegelman. And we began back in September of 2013. There's a sort of umbrella organization, the Pride Youth Theater Alliance, and we got an incubator grant from them to start a queer youth theater down in New Orleans. So in the fall, we sort of had a series of open performance workshops for youth to come and sort of experience the type of practices and activities that we'd be doing to make work. And then in January, we had auditions, chose these seven youth, and since then we've been building a devised piece, which means a piece that they've written and created themselves. Mm-hmm. That's going to premiere this Friday. It's really exciting.
Sweet. And what's it called?
It's called Beyond Acceptance.
Mm.
Yeah. So we had a list of like 25 themes that the piece could be about, and sort of did some storytelling around different themes, some visual art with Soraya Jean-Louis actually came in and led a workshop with us, which was great, to sort of narrow down what the focus of the piece would be. And the theme that they came up with was, what is a queer world? Mm. Beyond gender and beyond acceptance. Do we live in one now? If it doesn't yet exist, what does it look like? And if it collided with our world, what would happen?
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds really awesome.
It's really great.
So what were some of the processes of creation? I heard you said kind of workshops with like Soraya, and I'm sure probably other folks came in that you exposed to the kids.
Yeah. So we did, I think we had four workshops. Soraya Jean-Louis did a visual art workshop. Sarah Carastas, who is the former director of About Face Youth Theater in Chicago, who's also our peer mentor on the project, came down and did a storytelling workshop that was really, really generative for the young people. And then we did a workshop with Derwin, right, from Breakout, and they did a Gender 101 workshop to sort of just get everybody on the same page about terminology and language and the idea of the sort of gender and sexuality spectrum. And then our final workshop was actually with a True Colors Youth Ensemble out of Boston. They're the oldest queer youth theater in the country. They've been going for about 18 or 20 years. So a couple of their youth came down with their director, and they did a workshop on roots. They're working on a piece right now around the theme of roots. And so that paired with, we've been doing viewpoints training, which is a particular physical theater methodology that's a lot about bodies moving in space and what can happen as they sort of interact with each other. So we've been doing that combined with some vocal and songwriting workshops or activities, I should say, and then a lot of generative improvisation prompts. We had them all do a 5-sentence poem on what a queer world smelled, looked, tasted, felt, and heard, sounded like. And a couple of other things like that in the process. Scenes got, you know, pulled together. And then, you know, we did a storyboarding exercise where we looked at what the gaps were and what were the things we wanted to say and how they would appear in the piece. Yeah.
Yeah, and just for our listeners who may not be familiar with the term queer, you know, what does that really mean? And also, what does youth mean? Is this teenagers or?
Yeah. So, queer. So when we named the theater, we were like, this is a placeholder name, right? Like, once we get the ensemble together, we'll figure out what our actual name is and go with that. In the process of getting ready for the piece, that has not happened yet. So next year, we will probably be called something different. there have been a lot of really fabulous names. But queer, for us, for the ensemble, is really about sort of encompassing a spectrum of what it means to be of this sexuality and experience of liking people of the same sex or being someone who doesn't not identify with any particular gender or identifies with a gender that was different than what they were born or assigned, I should say, at birth. And it's been really interesting because the majority of our group is actually trans, and which is kind of magical because I think in the LGBTQ community right now, trans people and trans issues are sort of being lifted up and also being scrutinized because people don't really understand what it means, right? People are like, you're trans, what does that mean? I don't. And so it's been a really lovely learning experience of sort of discussing the capacity of what queer can hold. And then when I say youth, we mean our age range is 14 to 21. That was the age for folks who could audition. And our actual ensemble is 15 to 20. Yeah, so it's a range.
Yeah.
It's a range.
Really cool.
So I heard you mention song. I'm kind of interested in what this story is going to look like a bit. So there's going to be music involved?
Yeah, there's live music. So I'm also a member of ArtSpot Productions, and that theater company has a pretty deep history and tradition of putting live music into their piece, and so into their pieces, into our pieces. So that's something I sort of wanted to offer to this ensemble. So there's they each actually wrote their own melodies, pieces of text that came out of their 5 cents poems, and then generated melodies from those, and then we sort of fused them. So there's a song that they all wrote together that's in the piece. There's also one of our young people, Erin, is a budding sound designer. And so she sort of took this really lovely idea that I'm not going to tell you about because I want you to be surprised and put it all together. So there's a sort of an original soundscape in the piece. And then there's a bunch of popular music that we have jammed to since January that sort of found its way in. So that part of the world is definitely there.
I can really like see the excitement in your face as you talk about this thing. And I just was curious like what it's been like for you. Or are there any particular moments that stood out or what you've learned from this experience?
Yeah, I have learned the power of ensemble. Or not even learned, it's just been reinforced. Because I think I came into theater as an individual artist and then joined an ensemble. And it's really magical to have, you know, 9 other people whose brains you can bounce ideas off of. And I think the creative process for this piece has been highly collaborative. The young people have been there directing, giving input at every stage. I would say probably like 90% of the script is all their writing. That's just really wonderful. And even in rehearsals, like I'm directing the piece, which basically means I have final say on what we do, but everybody is giving input. And it's great because the young people are really awesome about being like, how about this? Or maybe we should try this. And I'm like, that's a wonderful, yeah, let's do that. That's amazing. And sort of really finding ways to pull that together. So that's one thing. I also think it's been, when I was growing up, I didn't do any queer things, right? Like there weren't any sort of spaces for queer young people. And I mean, I wasn't out when I was their age either. So, but I think it's really lovely. New Orleans doesn't have that many spaces for queer youth. When I say that many, I mean there are 3 that I know of, including us. And so it's just really magnificent to be a part of sort of creating a gathering space where young people can come in and talk about their dysphoria and talk about their, you know, experience coming out at school and talk about what it meant to to be in the process of transition and to all have that in the same space and to be able to learn from each other as that's happening and to really be able to then take their life experiences and transmit that through the lens of these characters that they've created, who are young people in school who don't have access to the things that they need to sort of be their authentic full selves and to feel whole and to dream about what that could look like, you know, and sort of push for that in a creative lens that's really, for me, transformative and really great to be a part of.
I had the pleasure recently of going to your reading of,
Looking at Abroad.
Looking at Abroad. Yeah. And I just found it magnificent.
Thanks.
It really spoke to, as much as, yeah, it spoke to your experience as a Black woman. Obviously, that's the way you show up in this world. And I really appreciated it. Would you be okay to talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Can you take us through that creative process a little bit? Like, how did you... Because you said it was a long time coming.
Yeah. So, Looking at Abroad, sort of the inception of that piece probably came to me, I want to say it's 2014. 9 years ago? Mm-hmm. During my second to last trip to China in 2005, and I'd gone with a couple of friends of mine from college to India first, and then went to China, and then went to London, and was sort of studying abroad for 7 months, and traveled to Italy, and went all these places. And I had, you know, a good 9 month chunk of my time traveling, and being the only Black person and the only Black woman in the groups of people that I was traveling with. Which had happened before, but I think my level of sort of cognizance of that experience had been not as deep. Mm-hmm. And just being really aware of the way that I was perceived and treated and interacted with. I remember being in Italy at this Chinese restaurant with my friends. And sort of when I came, I think I came in first, and they just kind of ignored me for a while. And then my friends came in who were all white, and they came in, they joined me, and then it was like immediate service, and we got set down, and all this stuff happened. And then everybody was asking me what to eat, right? Because I have spent a lot of time in China, and like, I love the food. And then when it came time to order, I actually ordered in Chinese, and the staff was like completely blown away, and then got really excited, right? They're like, oh, foreigner who speaks our language, and there was this whole interaction, but that wasn't the sort of the way that they came to me initially. Mm-hmm. And so I just remember doing a lot of writing, a lot of journaling then, and then years following about my experiences, and wondering, you know, what does traveling in the world as a Black woman say about identity? What does it say about specifically being a Black American woman, the ability to find a place that feels like home. And I'm a first generation Zimbabwean immigrant. So also like having a pretty direct tie to where my home is and where my people sort of came from, and still not having very rarely felt free and very rarely felt like situated in a place where I could be my full self. Mm-hmm. And so what that sort of experience was from a voice that we don't normally hear from. And so wanting to explore that, and in the process also exploring what the sort of physical experience of those experiences, how that lives in the body, how trauma lives in the body, how joy lives in the body, how the sort of bounds of our skin hold what home actually is for us, and how that sort of gets revealed through life. Yeah.
Well, it really is a great piece. And when are you going to produce that fully?
Yeah. The plan as it stands is to produce that in October here in New Orleans. I don't have a venue yet, but I'm close.
Can you say what it was, just for people who don't know?
Yeah, Looking at Abroad. It's going to be a one-woman solo performance piece in New Orleans in October, directed by Ebony Golden, who lives in New York. Choreographed by Audrey Hales, who lives in New York, and then designed by Jeff Becker and Melissa Cardona, who both live in New Orleans. Nice. Yeah.
All right, so you actually came here for New Orleans Youth Queer Theater, so I wanted to go back to that, and yeah. I don't necessarily have linear interviews, so...
That's cool. I'm enjoying myself.
Yes, that is... So, okay, so tell us about the run of the show.
Great.
Let's get into some of those specifics.
The nitty-gritty. Yeah, so we open this Friday, 8 p.m., 1232 O.C. Haley at the Dryads Theater. The doors are going to open around 7:30. You can buy tickets online. What's that address? I think it's ticketleap.com/NOQYT, I think. Maybe. Or if you just Google New Orleans Queer Youth Theater Beyond Acceptance Ticket Leap, you'll find it. We're also on Facebook at New Orleans Queer Youth Theater, and there's information on our Facebook page. So the show's Friday night at 8, Saturday night at 8, and then Sunday we're actually doing an afternoon matinee at 3 p.m., and if you are so inclined, there's actually going to be a sort of cocktail party,
give us
money donor thing following the Sunday performance right next door to the theater from 5 to 7. That's being hosted by the wonderful Emily Danielson and Rosanna Cruz. I love them.
Yeah, that's something I was going to ask. You mentioned that you were running on a grant right now, and mm-hmm. we always like to talk about the money.
Money.
So... What's been your experience with that? And...
Yeah, you know, it's actually been kind of great. We're small right now. So we've sort of been trying as much as we can to do grassroots fundraising. So the initial incubator grant we got was $2,500. And I should mention this because I think everyone would chastise me later if I don't, that we pay our youth. So they receive $500 stipends for participating in the process. And it roughly breaks down to $250 to create, $250 to perform. And so there's seven of them, so that's $2,500 right there. And so... done. Gone. So, and we've been lucky and blessed that our space for rehearsal has been donated by the Unitarian Universalist Church.
They do a lot of really good work.
And so all the other money was for production costs and giving the directors a little bit of a stipend as well and buying food and snacks. So we did a Halloween fundraiser that hopefully is going to be an annual event last fall and raised a grand. Just having a great costume party. It was really fun. Shout out to Red Trammell for hosting that. And then we did a letter writing campaign over the Christmas holidays and raised about another $500 that way. And then we just finished up, we're in our final 27 hours of an Indiegogo campaign that was really about raising production costs, and that was for $2,500, and we met our goal. We've exceeded our goal, which is exciting. But you still have 27 hours to donate.
There you go.
Yes. Yeah, indiegogo.com/New Orleans Queer Youth Theater. You can find us. So we've actually managed to raise about 9 or 10 grand, I guess, this year. And luckily, or not luckily, I guess, fortuitously, the Pride Youth Theater Alliance is funded by Mukti, which is a granting organization that just funds queer youth theaters. That's all they do, which is phenomenal. These really lovely men, and we applied to a grant to them and actually have already received funding for next year. So we have a good chunk of our operating costs for next year and our stipends because we're trying to expand the ensemble. But yeah, there will be more opportunities to give. We're trying to sort of set up a continual sort of monthly sustainer group. Mm-hmm. So folks who can give $20 a month or $50 a month or $10 a month mm-hmm. for the next year to sort of just, you know, it's really great to have money to buy lunch for folks. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We like it. So yeah.
Is the show going on tour or is this just going to be, please tell us
what happens after this? That's a great question. We're trying to get through this weekend first, but we're hoping, so there's our fiscal sponsor is actually Alternate Roots, which is an organization of Southern activists and artists. working to undo oppression in the South through arts, community, and activism, sort of a combo plate. And they have a conference and artist retreat every August. So we're hoping to bring some, like at least a portion of the piece. Not all of the youth can go, but I think about half can go. So a portion of the piece to Roots. We've discussed remounting this piece in the fall. Some of our youth are in college, and some are going off to college. So it'll be a question of who the new ensemble is, if they're interested in sort of taking on some of the roles that folks are leaving. So we could do that possibly during Fringe Festival. And then we are committed to definitely creating a new piece with the next iteration of our ensemble that'll premiere at some point in the next year. So yeah, we'll see. Hopefully there'll be a remount of this piece, because I think, I have a feeling we're going to have really good houses this weekend, and the story is really important and really relevant. So I would love to, I'm sure everybody would love to see it live beyond this weekend.
You know, as a theater artist and someone who is involved in the theater like this, you know, there's a growing like theater community in New Orleans, and I'm just sort of curious how you see it fitting into that landscape and what you think activist or political theater can do, or what your hopes for it are.
Yeah. It's interesting. I feel like there's been a how do I describe this in words? A fluctuation that's been occurring sort of in theater, particularly post-Katrina, which I wasn't here pre-Katrina, but a lot of the folks I work with were, and there's been a sort of growth of new young theater companies who are doing devised work, who I think are very much trying to do work at the intersection of arts and activism, and trying to do work that is about something more than just the people, right? It's about people who have experiences that connect deeply with the communities that we are sharing our work with and in dialogue with our work about. And I think for us at the Queer Youth Theater, it was definitely an intention to primarily create a space in which queer young people could discuss their lives, could process their lives, and then transform that into theater. And secondarily, that space could be the art that's created could be a catalyst for movement building in that area, right? So you have Breakout, which does amazing work with youth that have been criminalized, LGBTQ, and specifically trans youth that have been criminalized, trans youth of color who've been criminalized through the criminal justice system, which is amazing work. And we are blessed to have some Breakout youth as part of our ensemble who bring a really unique perspective to the lives of queer youth in New Orleans. And I think, you know, visibility is huge, right? Like, I feel like education and visibility are sort of the first steps in shifting perceptions and in shifting policy. And so I think what we're trying to do is sort of a culture organizing strategy towards this work of we make art that sort of reveals the experiences that LGBTQ youth are having in the city of New Orleans and the ideas of how it can change. You know, I think one of the things that's really detrimental is the school policies towards queer youth. They're not really protected. I mean, we recently had, I think it was before city council, or no, the school board, about, you know, continuing to expand discrimination policies so they encompass LGBTQ youth in terms of the bullying policies that they have in schools. And it barely passed. You know, so the institutionalized discrimination that exists, both in jobs and in school and in being out on the street, is huge. And I think the play in particular speaks to that. So I hope that the Queer Youth Theater can sort of add to the voices that are visibilizing these young people and visibilizing their issues and their struggles and asking for change and pushing for change and raising awareness, right? Because this work can't happen in isolation, right? It has to happen sort of in solidarity with other movements and in conversation with other people who are also fighting for their for their rights to just be human and live in the world, you know, sort of fully themselves. So, yeah, I hope that it can fit in that way, and also sort of lift up youth voices and queer youth voices that we don't normally see, and I currently haven't really seen in the theater landscape until recently. Mm-hmm. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, for sure.
Awesome.
For sure.
So we did say we would get you out here around 8:30,
yeah.
And it is about that time.
Oh, okay, great.
For queer youth that would like to get involved for future ensembles,
yes.
When are you holding auditions, or when do you think you might be holding auditions? Mm-hmm. And how long do you hold an ensemble? Like, I know some of them you said will be going to college, but
right.
If not, would they be sticking around in?
Yeah.
You could speak to that a bit.
Great. So two things. One, I love my co-directors. Rachel just texted me and said I should shout this out. So if you want to buy tickets, it's www.noqyt.ticketleap.com. I'll say that first. And then, so auditions. We will probably have auditions again in the fall. And right now, the structure that I think we're going to work with is actually devising in the fall and presenting or premiering a new show in the spring, with the possibility of remounting our current piece in the fall. So I would say auditions will probably be sometime in September, October at the latest, probably September, right after school gets back in session. A lot of our outreach was done through schools and through youth and community organizations. But the best way to sort of stay abreast of what we're doing is either on our website, www.noqyt.org, or on our Facebook page, which is New Orleans Queer Youth Theater, and we'll have updates there. We're also probably going to have a couple of sessions over the summer that are just sort of open workshop sessions, like, come, there's a group that's coming through from California, a group of queer folks of color who are like aerialists and circus folks. So we're probably going to have a workshop with them that we'll have open. There's a couple of other workshops that we've been discussing, just having like two or three throughout the summer that'll be open for any young person, queer or allied. And then just in the fall, probably have a similar structure where a bunch of people can come in to help sort of create the piece, and then we'll definitely have auditions for the performance group, because there are different commitments in terms of time, and the performance commitment is more intensive than the sort of creation development commitment. But hopefully we'll have the same group to do both.
All right, and one last plug for this weekend's showtimes. I would do it myself, but I don't remember them all.
Friday, 8 p.m., Saturday, 8 p.m., Sunday, 3 p.m. at 1232. O.C. Haley, the Dryads Theater. And if you just want to come give us money, you can come on Sunday at 5 next door to the Dryads Theater and have a couple drinks with us.
And
it'll be great.
That performance will be Beyond Acceptance by
yes.
the New Orleans Queer Youth Theater, a group of powerful young folks that I wish you much success in
thank
everything.
You.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.